Accession number
34794,
Reel 1.
Joy Hunter, Reel 1. Joy, can you tell me where and when you were born, please?
I was born on the 15th of September, 1925.
And where was that?
In Brockmore Vicarage, which was a little, I suppose you'd call it an urban village now, sort of area of Brierley Hill, between Brierley Hill and Starbridge and that area.
And a little bit about your family?
Well, my father was a priest, Vale Church of England vicar, and my mother came from quite a different sort of family. Her father was, through marriage, had actually, his own family and his wife's family, had amalgamated two major commercial enterprises in West Bromwich. One was the Crown Oil Works, which is very important, I think, and the other was a kind of, I suppose you'd call it a builder's merchant. They'd got things like lavatories and bathrooms and glass and mirrors, and I remember he gave us one or two things for our when we were married, mirrors particularly, and a rather strange glass which didn't last very long. And then so she, as I say, had lived a very different life with plenty of money, I suppose, and the first car, I think, in West Bromwich my grandfather owned. And my father, on the other hand, came from Stoke-on-Trent, from Penkle, and I think left school at either 12 or 14, would be certainly 14, would be the eldest, I'm sure. And his mother and his aunt were people who did this beautiful hand painting at Copeland on china. So I think when he left school, somebody else told me this, I never knew for ages, he also went to Copeland's. And I imagine was kind of making the tea and brushing the, sweeping the floor, but I think did some kind of clerical work, I don't know. He always wanted to be a priest, so I imagine he'd started saving up from the age of, say, 14. And then he went to St. Aidan's in Durham, and then he was ordained in Liverpool's Anglican Cathedral, which of course was only partly built then. And then he came to West Bromwich as a curate to the church that my mother and her family went to, and that's how they met. And they were engaged for something. Well, they weren't engaged, but they didn't get married for 7 years, which now, of course, seems absolutely incredible. And my grandfather, when my father was allowed to visit and allowed to sit in the sitting room with my mother, her father would knock on the door at 10 o'clock, time to go home. So they were a very funny mixture. I think they adored each other, but totally different backgrounds.
Mm. What about your early education?
Well, originally, I think we had a governess. I'm sure we did, who came to the vicarage. And then we went to a little independent, I don't know what you'd call it these days, preparatory school. I think it did only have girls, run by the Mrs. Tomlinson, and that was in Starbridge. And one of the teachers lived up near Richard Thomas and Baldwin on the Dudley Road. And Mother used to walk us up the mile to begin with, then we went on our own. And we went on the bus with her to Starbridge, to the bus station, where we collected a whole lot of other girls. And we all marched up the hill in croc, I remember. And then, of course, my father, I can't tell you the dates exactly, but in 1936, my father was moved from Brockmore to Leek in North Staffordshire. And that was a beautiful place, and a lovely, lovely house, and Jacobean house, an absolutely super place. And so then, of course, schooling had to change. And my mother and her sister had been to an independent boarding school in Malvern. And somehow or other, I don't know how, I should think it greatly reduced prices for an old girl, I was sent at 11 to Lawnside in Malvern. And my sister, I had two sisters, the next one down, I think, went somewhere else to begin with, but eventually landed up at Lawnside, and so did my other sister, and both my cousins. But, of course, they're much younger than me, so not with me at the time. In the building, but not in my form.
And did you have any sort of favourite subjects, or was there an area that you particularly enjoyed while you were at school?
Well, it's a funny mixture, really, because there are lots of things I enjoyed, but I always seem to be getting into trouble. Yes, an extraordinary, very eccentric headmistress who, in those days, people didn't necessarily go to university because you had to pay anyway, so there's no university background, but she was extremely talented in the arts. And she was the sort of person who could walk into the English-speaking union, find there was a verse-speaking competition on, and she'd go in unseen and win it. And so we had all sorts of amazing people in the evenings. We'd had flautists and Dame Laura Knight, an artist, the other names have gone at the moment, Goosens, who were oboists, flautists. And we had a very talented piano teacher. The senior piano mistress was also broadcast in Birmingham quite often. And so music and dance. We had a dance teacher from Birmingham, and we put on massive kind of pseudo-Greek things every summer, either in the garden or in the winter gardens at Waltham. And so there was music and elocution, verse speaking, and art. I remember hearing about the Elgin Marbles. I found it terribly boring because they were sort of slides and they were black and white and grey, I seem to remember. But this gentleman came down from wherever one evening. So we were very privileged in that way, but of course there was absolutely no science, no lab, nothing like that. In fact, the year I left, I think they actually brought science into the curriculum. So some of my friends who wanted to go on and do things like that actually left and went to Cheltenham Ladies College or somewhere where they'd got more advanced scientific things. People who wanted to be architects, for instance, I think. So that went on until we took school certificate in those days, which actually was quite taxing because it all happened together and you had to pass in five subjects to get it. And of those subjects, one had to be English language, another had to be a foreign language. And if you wanted to matriculate, you had to get maths and you had to get Latin, I think. And then you had to get whatever other subject. In fact, I got about 9 very good passes, but I failed in Latin, which was a great shame for me. And I didn't take maths properly. I think I took arithmetic. I've never been good at maths, and I don't mind saying it. I've got a daughter who's brilliant. So I say I've got other skills, other gifts, maths, and go to pot. I can add 3 columns up 3 times, and they all come something different. However, so that was that. So then I left school in 1970. We had a school year that ran from January to December, which was actually potty because we took our school certs in the summer. And if you failed, you then had to wait another year to take them and you'd have to have a new syllabus. Whereas if we'd had a different kind of setup, we could have taken them again in December on the same syllabus. So I just did 1 year in the sixth form because I was at school with Catherine Holland, whose father was Captain of the Ark Royal. And she wanted to get to a university entrance. So we did actually start on hires, and she did get an exhibition, I think, to Lady Margaret Hall. But I left after a year, so I left in December 42.
Had there been, obviously at that stage, the war had started?
Oh yes, I was 13 when the war started.
How were you affected at school with the war?
Well, of course, actually we were air raid warnings, but I don't... although there was a big naval base in Malvern Link, I don't remember any bombs actually falling. And in one sense, we had to go down into the cellars where they'd put up wooden kind of bench things for us. But otherwise, I don't actually think it affected us terribly much. I mean, I went to and fro at the beginning and end of term by train from Worcester, Malvern to Worcester. And then I don't know quite what happened then, whether I was met or I can't remember that bit. Probably met by somebody, my granny's chauffeur probably, and somehow got home. But I don't remember that. The only thing I do remember was the day war broke out, as Wilfred Pickles was wont to say, we were in church, it was a Sunday morning, and the sirens went. And I was at a meeting yesterday when somebody said it was about 3 weeks before we heard a siren. I said, oh no. In Leek, we had a siren on the very first morning because we were in church and somebody came in to tell my father, obviously we were singing a hymn or something, and couldn't hear it. And so we just carried on with the service. And I don't remember... I really don't remember a lot about sirens until I went to London. And then I kept a record, and one day we had 25 sirens and all clears all in one day. On, off, on, off, on, off, while you're working, you know.
In that early period of the war, were there many sort of privations? I'm thinking along the lines of rationing and restrictions on movement.
Enormous rationing, yes, and restrictions on movement, because, of course, petrol was rationed. My father had by then, I think he bought it from somebody just before we left Brockmore. He had an old Austin 17, WP1729, I can remember the potty, isn't it? he was called out one night by the local bobby. A farmer had somehow, I suppose he had a telephone, phoned in to say he'd caught a German, young German, on the moors. He'd obviously parachuted out of an aeroplane. And presumably, I mean, one doesn't know, holding him at the end of a pitchfork. It's pure imagination, of course. And the bobby came, so he knew father had got a car and would have petrol allowance, and asked him to drive the bobby. So obviously the police station hadn't got any petrol. And so my father drove the car up onto the moors between Leek and Buxton. And the interesting thing is, I knew nothing about it. We were at home, it was school holiday time. And we knew nothing about it at all. And then about 2 or 3 days later, I can't remember exactly when, I overheard my parents talking. They must have known that this young man had been caught. I suppose that was probably common knowledge, and taken to the police station. And I heard my father say to my mother something like, you know, he was only a child. He was just about a year older than our Joy. It affected him very deeply. I think he was very upset. So I don't know what happened to the young man, but and why he'd ditched, I don't know what had happened. Just the bits. So you heard snippets of things, and of course the queuing for the food was the worst part in the holidays, because we had to queue. I've still got a ration book. And I've looked it up on the internet. Just immediately, certain things were rationed, about 4 or 5 ordinary things like butter and sugar and stuff. And then rationing, of course, went on until 1954. I was married in 1949, so it's still got ration books for 2 of my children.
So was it a case of queues would form for virtually everything?
Everything, in every shop, because there weren't any supermarkets. So one of us would queue at the butcher's, another one would queue at the greengrocer's, somebody else would queue somewhere else. And mother always said, you know, if you can get a bit extra, but very rarely, perhaps we'd come back with a sausage or two. And, of course, we had this terrible stuff called dried egg, which we cooked with and made cakes with. And I'm not sure, I don't think... Of course, if you were in the country, that was very different, because you could barter, you know, and if I'd got chickens, I could give you a couple of eggs and you grew potatoes or something. So, but father's lovely rose garden all had to be turned into vegetables. Our railings and our gate and everything were removed in the night like that for munition making, because they were metal railings. There was no argy-bargy about that. They just went, you know, they took them. The blackout, of course, was the other thing. It's only very strict, so we had to make frames for the windows. We had these huge windows in this vast ancient house. I mean, each window was about the size of my French doors there. So they're wide and tall. And we had 3 floors, so downstairs and then the middle floor where the drawing room was, and two of the bedrooms, and then up again another twisted staircase, and there were 5 rooms, I think, in the top, one of which our living in a maid, I suppose we called her, cook general, I think was the proper name. She slept in one, and there was just one bathroom and one downstairs lavatory, and an ancient kitchen with a Tayco boiler. With the hob, you know, and the kettle on the hob, and then a scullery, which was always rather cold and nasty, and then some outhouses. But, I suppose if you've never known anything else, remember, at 13, you know, you're not really very con. My sisters were younger, so one would be 11, and the other one would be 7. So really and truly, we never had a lot of money, obviously. So we never had very lush eating. But it was a bore, I remember. We had to go and queue, because Mother couldn't queue everywhere, and she'd got other things to do in the house anyway.
So was the restrictions on things like the blackout quite strict?
Oh, very. Wardens would go round every night and either be whistles blowing or banging on the door, put that light out, you know. And you could, of course, be taken to court, I think, if you flaunted it, because obviously light, wherever you are, at night and it's very dark. Obviously, it would show even if it's only one speck.
Mm. And did you have a radio for, I was thinking, as a sort of a family radio that you would listen to?
Yes, we did. And my father, when we were in Brockmore, I remember, he made a front for it. It wasn't exactly a cat, whisker, cat, whatever. But he made a beautiful wood cut front and backed it with a kind of multicoloured cloth so that it looked like a ship sailing out into the sunset. And this fitted over the whatever was inside. And I remember always listening. I think it was 9 o'clock on a Sunday night. They played all the national anthems of the Allies. Every night, BBC, well, it was home service it would be then. And so I remember listening to that. But I don't think we necessarily listened. I suppose my parents did. Children aren't just interested in news, really.
And at that time, how did you feel about the war as a youngster?
Difficult to say, really. I've been asked before whether, when I was actually working, I was certain we were going to win. Again, I really can't remember, especially when I was working, because such horrors were going on, and we worked in the hub of everything, so we knew exactly what was happening. And of course, we lived with the fear of invasion for 6 years. So wherever you lived in the country, there was always that. I think to begin with, and it's probably something I've been told or I've read, there's a sort of apathy kind of feeling. We've done this before, we've won, don't worry. And then suddenly there were lots of bombings, of course, and that brought people to their senses.
You mentioned you left school in 1942. What did you do?
Oh, right. Well, I'd always wanted to be a nurse, and in one of the school holidays, with some friends from school, I can't think how I had the bravery to do it now, we actually fixed up a fortnight's course with, I think the Red Cross at somewhere called Stratton Audley. I don't know where that is, but anyway, it was a fortnight's first aid and home nursing course, which I enjoyed. And I'd ridden, I think, to the Middlesex Hospital to find out about entry and so on. And I suppose my mind was really quite fixed on that. I know after Christmas 1942, so into 1943, I wasn't well. I used to get awful styes on my eyes, and I think I had a very bad bout of flu. Anyway, so immediately I got home, I signed on, because at 17 and 3 months you had to go to the Labour Exchange and sign on. And I remember my mother made me wear my guide uniform, which embarrassed me terribly, because now I wouldn't mind at all. I've been in the guides all my life. But then I couldn't spell my name properly. I remember the lady saying, "Is that word supposed to be Margaret?" Margaret Joy Millwood. Anyway, so one night, my mother came up to say goodnight, and she said, "Oh, Daddy and I have been talking, and we think that it would be a very good idea if her father, first of all, before that, father, when I talked about nursing, father, partly, I suppose, because of his younger life, thought it would be a very good idea if I went into a bank, because there's a pension." I didn't know what that meant, of course. And it was secure. Bank jobs were secure, usually.
So a stable career.
Yes, and secure from the war. You wouldn't get called up from a bank. Well, I don't know. I didn't do it. I thought that was incredibly boring. I couldn't imagine anything worse. And then one night, mother came up and said they'd been talking, and they thought it would be a very good idea if I had a secretarial training. And I was absolutely appalled. I was so angry. And I remember my rather strange headmistress saying about one or two of the very clever girls who were going to do secretarial trainings and said so at school. What a terrible waste, she thought that was. They should be doing something much more important and grand, you know. So I wasn't very happy about that, and somehow or other, and I still don't know and I'll never know now, they'd found out about Mrs. Foster's. Now, I don't know even whether that college still exists, but during the war there were about 5 residential secretarial colleges of a very high repute, Carr Sanders, St. James's, the Whitehall, Mrs. Hofstra's, normally based in Grosvenor Place in London, but the actual main college evacuated to a place called Gretford, which is a small village about 7 miles north of Stamford in Lincolnshire. And we were in Gretford Hall, which was a kind of minor country seat of somebody or other. Anyway, how they found out about this, I do not know. And I found a brochure when I was putting all this stuff together upstairs, And it was something like £90 for a 6-month course up front. Mind you, it was residential, of course. £90 for a 6-month course, residential. And my father's earnings could not have been more than about £350 a year. So how on earth? I think Mother had a little money in the West Bromwich Building Society. And I think her mother, who was well off, helped her quite a lot. But how they could possibly do that, I don't know. I know I had £1 a month pocket money, which wasn't very much. And when I said I'd spent it on books, they weren't pleased. So once you were there in this place, it was just work, of course, because there was nowhere else to go. And we just worked from morning till night, and then the evenings we tested each other on shorthand and so on. I did listen to the radio then. I remember listening to a wonderful play on the radio about Australia, ranch life. What was it called? Anyway, it made a big impression on me, and I sat up until 11 o'clock at night listening to this on the radio.
Did you come round to the idea of doing the secretarial course?
Well, you did what your parents told you in those days. Absolutely no choice, and I had no money, and I hadn't got the guts, I suppose, to run away. Anyway, where would I have gone? And what do you do with any money, and where do you go to? I'd got several pen friends, and one of them had offered me a job in Valkeakoski in Finland. But again, how would I go to get there? And what would I do when I was there? You know, I didn't know these people. Anyway, so I made my way over, I think, about May.
Is this 43?
Sorry?
Would this be 43?
This is 43, yes. Sorry, yeah. Yes, May. I think it was must have been about May, because I finished at Christmas, so it's a 6-month course, without any breaks.
And what did that involve then, Joy? Well, what did they get you to do?
Since I've had to do such a lot of thinking about this, I rather jokingly said I think it was a bit like a wartime finishing school, where they didn't promise you a rich husband, but they did promise you a very good job, and we all got very good jobs. They had an employment office in London, a city office, where you went and did a fortnight. We did all sorts of things. We did languages and committee procedure and parliamentary debate, civics, contemporary history, obviously shorthand typing and bookkeeping, which I hated. And I got roped into run the Sunday school at the local church, which is in the grounds. Goodness knows why I said yes to that. Learning shorthand was quite... We did Pitman's shorthand, which I still use almost every day. And I touch type. Well, I could. My hands have got a bit stiff now. I can't do that anymore. But we were aiming at certain speeds, 120 for shorthand and 100 for typing a minute.
Can I ask about the shorthand?
Yeah.
How do you go about learning shorthand? Is it literally just learning all of the...
All the symbols. And then there are contractions where certain words are fewer. You know, you learn the outlines of them. So instead of having to write every syllable out, you just have remember, for instance, it's just a burr like that, or a burr like that, whichever way you're looking. And then there's above the line, on the line, and below the line, and there's light and dark. So you get similar outlines for above the line, below, on the line, and below the line, for dark and light. So you have to remember which is which. But I suppose it comes. Anyway, it did come to me. Typing was more difficult. Miss Holt was our typing teacher, I remember. I do remember some of the names. And twice a week we had to type in our gas masks. And I mean, I've got a gas mask still, but it was hideous, really. You can't breathe properly. But we had to do that because of going to work in a place where we might have a gas attack and have to go on working, you see. And then another twice, I think it was, she made us type to music. I suppose to get an even touch. Well, I am musical. And I found that incredibly difficult. She always chose march time. Tum-ti-di-dum-ti, tum-ti-di-dum-ti, tum-ti-tum-ti-tum. Well, I'd say, okay, if you've got a three-letter word and a bar, space bar, three, bang, no. Then you get a five-letter word and a space bar, and you're still going one, two, three, four, one, two, three. Well, I told you I wasn't good at maths. I can't synchronise that at all. I absolutely hated it. So I remember certain things. But I do remember Mrs. Mayo, who taught us civics and contemporary history, and she was extremely good and very widely read lady, I think, and I enjoyed those sessions.
With the typing, though, I take it you were using the old-fashioned typewriter.
Oh yes, Imperials or Royals or I don't know what. Yeah.
How easy is it to use a sort of old-fashioned, sort of mechanical typewriter? Because most people now obviously use
well,
a laptop,
actually,
don't they?
My old electric one out the other day, well, a couple of months ago, which I bought, I don't know how long ago now, it's a Brother 700 and something rather. And actually, I turned it on, plugged it in and turned it on, and it's much easier to type. So when I went, when they started introducing computers in my last job, that was fine. Laptops I can't do because it's the wrong position. I'm about this all the time, so I have to do it, you know. And now I can't do touch typing anyway. But I kept up my 100 words a minute, and I could do that pretty well faultlessly. And read at the same time, you see, so it's really very quick.
So it seems like quite an intensive course for that.
Well, yes, it was,
period.
Obviously, because, I mean, some people did the year's course, but one or two people wanted to get very high speeds. So I remember one of the women or girls or whatever wanting to work for Hansard. You had to do 160 words a minute for Hansard. So I think she must have been on a year's course.
I imagine it's quite difficult as well, though, because obviously if you made a mistake with the old-fashioned typewriters...
Oh, don't talk about that. That was horrendous. It wasn't quite so bad at college, but when I got to work, we had to do 6 carbon copies of everything we did, whatever it was. So, also had on your desk a cup with little bits of white paper in, because, as you can imagine, if you want to correct a crop with 6 carbon, you've got to start with the back one. Otherwise, you rub the top one out, you smudge the whole thing. So you do the first one, then you put a bit of paper in, then you do the second one, third, fourth, bit, up to the top. Then you take all the bits of paper out and hope that you typed it correctly the next time. So it was quite a lengthy process. And then if we're doing a wax, for instance, or a stencil, as they used to be called, you used to put a carbon in that so that it could be checked for reading. But if you made a mistake on that, you corrected it with something like nail varnish, which... smell, I mean, talk about glue sniffing. We weren't into glue sniffing in those days, but it was really very, very pungent. And you plastered the mistake with this stuff and let it dry. But then, of course, when you typed over it, it was obviously made a mistake, because you've got this great blob of stuff to type through. I made loads and loads of mistakes. Anyway, I did get through Mrs. Hostis, which was good. And I met Pam Wilson there, who later became Enoch Powell's wife. That was interesting. Shared a room with her.